sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
Yellow Jackets. Oh, John.
John. And welcome to the show. This week we continue our series as we celebrate International Women's Month. This week we will review Nia DaCosta's Candyman. As always, John will give us the...
Don't do it. And if we've learned anything from the English, it's your device can be a black mirror.
Why am I holding up this mirror? Stop saying it, John. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we will go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We are reviewing Yellow Jackets Episode 8, titled Flight of the Bumblebee. John, this was a really good episode.
It was.
I think we should talk about what I think is the most important thing. We got to pour one out for Laura Lee as she died in the plane.
Laura Lee went up in flames.
I know, yeah.
Which was interesting because earlier in the episode, didn't she almost drown? And that's when she found God because she was looking at the sun.
Oh, so you know what I think that is? That was her premonition. She exploded over that body of water. This episode.
I'm going to argue that she was Icarus and flew too close to the sun.
I'm going to say I hated this. This is the thing I hate. I hated it. Because like...
Oh, well, you didn't buy that rickety old plane that hasn't had any maintenance in who knows how long. Worked randomly and then, of course, went up in flames.
Yeah, no.
Interesting.
I just feel like Laura Lee got shafted, and I think that
I disagree. I think she died a virgin. Oh, you know, topical. Yeah. A hornball. Yeah.
No, I really liked the Laura Lee character. I was expecting more from her, so showing her you know, her kind of origins to religion. And I thought, okay, it's going to be good. We're going to build on the Laura Lee character. Kaboom! She blew up and ran away. So I was kind of bummed about that and bummed that we didn't know more about her.
If we've learned anything from previous episodes, Van,
nobody
things aren't what they appear. So maybe we'll get a little miracle.
I kind of went to that. I think Lottie kind of witnessed it. So anything kind of Lottie witnessed is going to happen. So.
But I feel like that character is going through a Lottie anyway. You're welcome.
Nice. But yeah. I don't know. Bummed
Johnny's
about
back
that.
To work, so he's got all the dad jokes in the world. So he doesn't say naughty stuff at work by accident. Revert to old man mode.
Oh, it is. Did you see this death coming? Was this poignant for you, John? Did you like it? Did you dislike it?
I kind of assumed that character would die or disappear at some point just because she is one of the characters that has not made an appearance as an adult yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Starting to look more and more. I mean, at this point we can with the spoilers we've seen, with the spoilers I've seen that I won't spoil for you. You kind of see who the core surviving girls are going to be and who is most definitely not going to make it. And I guess
I don't like who I hear Lauren Ambrose is going to be in it. Who could she possibly be? She's a redhead.
The pale redhead? Who like could who? She be? I don't know, but coincidentally, Travis? Van is alive. This made, oh, Van made weird. It.
Van is alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's alive. She got half a face. So she's going to have, this is her villain origin story where she's Two-Face.
Yeah, it's weird because she also got a coin and they're like, hey, we found this quarter next to your body. The back is all fucked up, but the front still looks good. But it's also double-sided. Weird.
Yeah, so I knew about this already because the next episode has a thumbnail of Van with half her face yeah. covered.
I saw and that too, and I was like, oh, yeah, I guess we'll just shut up about it for an episode.
Yeah, I mean, poor judgment at somebody at Showtime. Fuck that up. So...
Yeah. Yeah, it was a thumbnail that had Van, and for some reason there was captions on the thumbnail that said, I can't believe I survived that and didn't die in the last episode.
And then, oh, you know what's funny is that Thaisa has like half her face covered too, so maybe she did it to make her feel better, as they do, I'm assuming, Homecoming, because this is Doom coming, so.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll yeah. Out. Well, I don't know if you knew about the title, but or the, who else is in that photo, John, but I just spoiled that for you.
Interesting.
No more. That's it. No more out of me. As we move on to another thing that happened. Another thing I didn't like that happened this episode. That was the least surprising thing. Adam is extorting Shauna. That's the note I had.
I called. It was either one of those guys.
Yeah, you did mention Jeff was a possibility, and it still could be Jeff. Actually,
it could be both of them.
It could be Jeff lovers. And Adam. Yeah, it's true. It's a very woke show. So, yes, it's very possible.
Even though, what's his name? Ben, right? Is that his name? No. God, I was like, what? Like, Ben is slowly becoming one of my favorite characters, and I keep just trying to call everybody Ben. Adam.
Adam, yeah.
Yellow Jackets creators, quit giving dudes basic white guy names. There you go. I said
that. Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah, Adam, I was also surprised to learn was born in like 91. Was that what he said?
Wow.
I was yeah. like, what?
So how old is he then? He's
going to be like 30. 33?
Three.
I mean, two?
Two. I'm just repeating whatever you're saying, yeah. John.
Quick math. It's 2023 minus 1991.
He's 22?
1800. 32.
No, wait. Oh, God. My brain melted there. 32. So.
Luckily, we're past our mid-30s, so we're not expected to know math anymore.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. Just counting our millions. That's all we care about.
I'm in our mid-20s.
So. Yeah. But yeah, so I didn't like that. I Adam, it just seems like the most... I guess it's been staring in front of our face this entire time that he was some random, mysterious, handsome guy comes into Shauna's life and sweeps her off her feet. So
maybe I guess he's just into glitter. I don't know.
It's maybe... It's kind of a boring, predictable storyline. That's what I don't like about it. But I'm curious to see where they go with it, I guess. Like, yeah, where...
Maybe.
I was kind of...
Maybe he's being used also.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, that's what I mean. I hope they do, like, a... You know, like a head fake. You know, like, they do something to kind of twist it instead of him being the lying extorter.
I also like that... Shauna's daughter was right, so this is probably gonna like eat her up.
That's true. Yeah, Shauna's daughter, who I don't know her name offhand, is did call it, and Shauna was, this is what I mean, like Shauna was kind of already suspecting him and then kind of gave up on that, and then now we're back all, now she kind of goes like full mode on the lies at Adams. Sure,
right?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look it up either.
Because I've been feeling for that character. Like, everything that she's doing I'm like, it's not wrong. And she's just trying to like live her life as a kid. But Shauna's got, obviously for good reasons, a lot of hangups, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is a little bit satisfying that she has actually kind of right about something.
Yep. And that obviously Shauna was so swept up by all of this, and she was the, a repressed housewife.
Who could just come forward and like, but I'm also assuming the reason she doesn't want to confront Jeff about it is because, and there's a lot of factors, but she lives her life in secrets. They all do.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so. Yeah. And Shauna's been kind of like, also felt guilty about taking, Teen Jackie's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Sleeping with him, getting pregnant, building a life with him.
We can also safely assume he probably knows what happened too. We just haven't gotten to that point of what happened in the Jeff. Like after all this time, I'm assuming at some point she told him.
That they ate her? Because that's my guess.
Maybe.
I don't think Shauna would tell her, because I feel like, and we can get to our next my next bullet point as I took notes this episode. Jackie is getting her revenge now. Now we're seeing her hook up with Travis, be manipulative with the group. So she's lashing back against.
Which,
Shauna,
which is kind of weird.
And the group.
She just kind of sucks. Like she's been a bad person this entire time. And Shauna's the only one that's been kind of like defending her.
I would say she's been a selfish person. I always felt like her character was going that way. Self-involved, yeah. Selfish, since the first episode, but then they kind of like had,
leader. Yeah.
Yeah. They did the whole like thing where she was kind of like the leader of the soccer group and blah, blah, blah. And then they've tried to, as they've been, crash landed or whatever, surviving in the woods, they have made an effort to make Jackie unlikable again. So, or bring out her worst traits, right? Yeah. And this is Jackie reacting to what happened to Shauna, So she is kind of manipulating Travis, because Travis seems to have, again, rejected Natalie. So
I would love to hear, because we're at an age where we can kind of sympathize with how, shitty Travis seems by today's standards.
Right. Yeah.
Just because of the way we were conditioned back then to think about gender and stuff like that.
And women sex and sex. And, yeah.
So I'd love to hear like a younger person's take on this. I wonder if they're just like completely horrified by this guy.
Yeah.
What a garbage human being and blah, blah, blah.
He's definitely, he's kind of a, he's kind of been unlikable. He's straddled that line pretty much since the beginning, right? Like his behavior, and he kind of had his hard facade kind of thing to him.
Yeah, because it's the early 90s, and he's one of three males amongst a bunch of women, which unfortunately back then meant like he felt like superior in some way.
And I feel like they did, and with this Natalie hookup thing, they kind of softened him up a little bit. So, yeah. But I feel like he's more, the type of character that's not easily definable, right? As like good or bad. He's kind of like gray area, leaning bad.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So I think this is all set up for, I'm starting to
Breaking Bad yet.
Cooking meth.
Travis, Mr. White.
I gotta feel like I don't think Jackie's gonna get eaten this episode. I think.
I don't think we're.
I feel like they got to end it on a big note. So I'm trying to figure out, like, are they even going to address the cannibalism? Because we're nearing the end. We got two more of these episodes. So
I don't think so. I don't think that happens this season now. That's my guess.
Yeah. That's what I'm starting to hint. That's what I'm sensing too. That Jackie's. I think they like this character, Jackie, and kind of the chaos she's creating, right? So I can see her sticking around.
Of the young group.
Currently, yeah. Yeah, so.
That Laura Lee's been fired from the group.
I think she's coming back. And plus it's like, oh, we have to get rid of this actress too, who they cast pretty, she's like top billed cast member, right? Yeah. This actress. So I imagine they're going to find ways to keep her around. So
I think so too. Also, interesting. Johnny's got a WD-40 his office chair finally.
That's okay.
Sorry for the squeaks.
No problem. Okay, let's hit a couple of other things. Let's hit the whole Thaisa storyline because she has tons of shit going on this episode. Tons and tons of shit. So
actually, can we quickly just address Ben finally came out?
Oh yeah. Ben is gay, which is why he had condoms. Which is very, very good for him.
Good for him.
Safe sex.
Which is kind of like but also a pretty heavy stereotype. Like, he's just going to go fuck. Like, I'm waiting for it to be like, yeah, there was this huge party going on where we were going to go.
Seattle? What is it? Yeah. It's gay capital of the world, John. Seattle. If you know that. Hookup capital of the world.
Kurt Cobain, classic, iconic.
See, you goofed when you visited Washington. You should have taken you should have visited Seattle.
I did visit Seattle, but it was so gloomy the one day I was there. It was like,
did you hook up?
No. I was only there for like, unfortunately not. I didn't meet Ben over there like I thought I would back in 1991.
See, you're doing it wrong, John.
Instead, I spent 3 hours in line trying to get into the very first Starbucks because that's fun, right? Capitalism.
That does sound fun. If I was in Seattle, I'd go too. I would do that shit too. What is it? The farmer's market, right? The famous...
Pike's Place.
The name
of the area.
They're
like most famous coffee, I think.
Mm-hmm. Pike's Place. Yeah.
It was underwhelming, but yeah, cool.
It's a Starbucks. Sounds like every Starbucks I've ever been to.
I mean, they didn't change anything about it, and it was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, this is it. Then I just kind of moved on.
Yeah. Well, there you go. All right. Good for Ben. All right. So Thaisa, so a lot of things happen to her. She comes clean about sleepwalking, which is why she eats dirt. And she's...
Classic sleepwalking thing to do is eat dirt.
she's been the one. I'm assuming all that spooky stuff, the man hiding outside her window and everything going on with her kid is... Thaisa, right? His way of dealing with Thaisa's odd behavior. So there's no ghost, no extra spookiness. We don't even know if there's that blind man that briefly mentioned. He might still show up, right? But
I want to say there is an added factor or something that they're not addressing.
Yeah, because right now it seems that the way I'm inferring the show is that because of she feels guilty for what happened with Van, and she fell asleep on her watch because she was asleep in the tree or whatever, and then Van got half her face eaten, possibly died, and from that point forward she has this guilt and all this other stuff that she hasn't really quite dealt with. So what I mean?
Well, no, because she was already acting animalistic and primitive before this, like 2 episodes or 3 episodes before.
See, but that was Lottie's. Are you talking about Lottie's premonition?
I don't think that was a premonition, because she walked up and she still had her longer hair. She hadn't cut her hair, no mullet yet. And then she approached her the next day, right? And she was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." I feel like she actually did see that.
Oh, that's a good catch. I interpreted it quite a little differently. That was just a Lottie premonition thing, that she saw the future of her behavior.
It quite possibly could be also. I don't know why I remember it being like, oh, that's Thaisa, and I don't think she had her hair cut yet.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we'll see how that plays out. Yeah, I think the way you're interpreting it sounds correct also, so we'll see how it plays out. Let's see. I thought there actually was a nice moment too, because they have a nice scene where Thaisa and Shauna are, as adults, are speaking with each other, and Thaisa's kind of like confessing about everything going on, and they end up like having like a sleepover type thing or whatever, which nicely mirrored when they were kids, because remember Shauna started sleeping in that room, and Thais is the only one that slept with her. So there's like, they already kind of have that, you know, there's some symmetry there with their friendship and being comfortable with each other as adults and teens and stuff. So that was a nice moment.
And then Misty's captive tried to kill her bird, that fucking asshole.
There was some really memorable, excellent Misty stuff, in the sense that, like, not only did you, that really funny scene with the bird where she she releases the bird, but that she, you know, shows after the bird's released, it flies away, and she like tries to run after it, feeling guilty about all the things that she said, that she didn't care for it and stuff like that, which is a nice moment for Misty. And then she ends up saving Natalie as well when she snorts coke. Misty's a fucking hero.
Fucking Natalie is blackmailing somebody she used to do drugs with to finally get an answer that we're looking for.
The AA sponsor, yep, about Travis's bank account. Why was it drained? So that's... What do you think drained Travis Bank? I'm assuming his brother.
I was gonna say Javi, who I feel like dramatically aged this episode.
You were mentioning
young people growing older. Case in point, Stranger Things.
Oh my god, yeah.
A few of those kids look way too old.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that covers most of my notes. We hit everything.
I just like when people try to say that, like, don't you remember, like, when you hit puberty back in like high school or whatever, and then like you just like dramatically changed appearance and blah blah blah. I'm like, nope. In fact, I still kind of look exactly the same. So I don't know what the fuck where I went.
No, I have some pictures where I have some awkward photos. So
I think back then, like a lot of my photos are kind of cringy. Like I had like long hair and.
Yeah, same.
I still have longer.
I really did.
I saw that. Yeah. Rolona had like long, like a very grungy straight hair look. Like
hell yeah, hell yeah, I did.
Now he's got a Jason Statham thing going on.
Yeah, both work incredibly well. So, all right. Tell me, what did you think? What did you think of this episode? Seconds? Yeah, give me the last bit. Give me a little summation.
Really liked it. Looking forward to seeing where it goes. Wondering if you're going to change your mind about not just going straight into the second season.
We could. Are we? We shouldn't talk about this on air. People don't like to. Like, we talk about how the sausage is made around here, but
let us know in the comments below.
I mean, I would. I was, so I'll be completely honest. I was like at a fucking 11 with this show. I love this shows right away. I think we both did. But, yeah. You know, lately I've been like less liking stuff. And that's actually how I feel about the show, where I didn't like everything that happened in this episode, storyline developments, but still liked enough of it. So I was like mixed. I was mixed. And
yeah, I feel that. Also, I think From might come back pretty soon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that would be really good. We got to get on that shit. Or Interview with the Vampire.
Or Interview with
the Vampire. I don't know if we should watch it in real time, because then it'd be like waiting every week to watch it. Whenever it airs, Yellow Jackets. I don't know when it airs. Sunday?
Oh, the sausage is made.
All right. We got to move on, probably. Yeah. All righty. Let's move to our main review of Candyman. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5?
That's 4.
Oh, no. Why am I holding this mirror? Damn it. Stop. Give us the plot in 5 words, John.
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For 2021's Candyman, directed by Nia DaCosta. Coming in at number 3, dental commercial goes too far.
Dental commercial goes too far? What do you...
dental commercial goes too far.
I don't think I get that one.
Don't eat candy, kids, because you're not going to believe what they use as a scraper in these parts. Captain Hook's your dentist. Coming in at number 2 for Candyman, art community finds sweet spot.
Also would accept a sweet tooth, but all right. Excellent. And
coming in at number 1. Not the bees! The bees!
So, we should probably mention that it's a little in-joke between you and I that we've never saw Candyman. Yeah. And for some reason, we talked and talked and talked about watching this movie. And
2 years later.
2 years later, we finally... And it always would make the list. It's like, maybe we should watch Candyman. It's on streaming service, or it's available to rent, or whatever. We just never got around to it. John, was it worth the wait?
So, in the interim, right, several people have come up to me and asked if I've seen the movie over the years. And then they always said the same exact thing, like... It's really good, but then it just kind of turns into a crap movie. I have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. In fact,
I knew it. Yeah.
I rewatched the second half 3 times because I was like, maybe there's something I want to see what they're seeing. And I cannot for the life of me understand, because I thought this movie was fucking brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah, do you think they're just Tony Todd stands, or
what? I'm guessing they don't know what, or, you know, I hate to point things out, but I think a lot of them were white, so that's a telling thing. But I was like, what the fuck? This movie's fucking great. I loved it.
And yeah, actually, the same. I loved this movie. And I think that it's a shame we didn't watch it sooner. Yeah, I think it's a great sequel.
I think, so let me just give a rundown of what the movie's about. So there's this like absurdly handsome black man is an artist. And then he goes around being very charming and very handsome. And he's also a very handsome black man. And then he has a bad time at the end.
He has a piece of candy, and then
that's it. Once you get one cavity, it's like cavities are the herpes of the mouth. Actually, herpes are probably the herpes of the mouth, but you know, you get one and then there's a bunch of cavities. So
put that on the poster: herpes of the mouth. this was a wonderfully, I think, thoughtful sequel to the original.
Yeah.
Which always was incredibly, whether, you know, I saw it whenever the original Candyman, whenever it came out. I don't know if I could quite articulate it then, but what I'm saying now about it is that it's about something serious, yeah. Candyman. Even though it has the horror, the gore, and a wonderful performance by Tony,
yeah.
That there was always something about it, right? It wasn't your typical horror movie, right? It had a little something more, which is why probably they got so many sequels out of it and so on and so forth. But what I love with they...
I was just going to say, and I also want to just point out, I feel like it's very... The original one was maybe too hard-hitting, and people wanted to say it felt silly, but when you rewatch it, it doesn't feel silly at all. It's kind of like another what I consider a very poignant movie that has, like, it seems like a very silly premise is Tales from the Hood, where you think it's going to be like, oh yeah, that movie was fucking silly, and then you rewatch it and you're like, holy shit, that was heavy. Like, people don't want to, they only want to see what they want to see, I guess. But yeah,
I think this movie also has the strength of having a wonderful premise
and right? An insanely talented cast.
And insane, yeah. And I think that people love the idea. Well, I mean, the hook of this movie is like the horror aspect of it is seeing Candyman.
Huh? The hook of the movie
is that they have this thing that, you know, that's fun to do, right? That just to say Candyman five times in a mirror. Yeah. Like they have this wonderful hook. I'll say it again. Of a easy explained plot of why this character exists, right?
Which we'd be remiss to not mention. It was a R.I.P. Clive Barker creation.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and in that movie they blended social commentary, a little bit of social commentary, with great horror and you know gory horror and stuff like that. And I think this movie is paying thoughtful homage to the whole movie. Like, it does the exact same thing. It takes a little bit of social commentary, a modern social commentary that's happening right now of police brutality, right? And gentrification, and taking those bits and pieces that were also in the movie. Gentrification was also in those movies as well, about poverty and stuff like that. And then applying again, building upon the mythology of the Candyman. So they added a lot of little things to this to kind of like flesh it out so it can kind of feel like the mythos of the Candyman, which wasn't explored in the first one.
No. Like this one, I think, how do I say this without spoiling something? And there is a more poignant view of how minorities are conditioned to be certain ways, even when you don't think they, you know, minority, because we're coming from a minority viewpoint as well, where we don't think we're doing the wrong thing, we just think we're doing what's right, but what's right isn't necessarily the right thing. We're just conditioned to believe it. Also, did you catch that also brilliantly portrayed Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who I really loved in that the English TV show Misfits, which was a long fucking time ago now. But his partner and he were the only, I think, people that you see on screen that aren't introduced to Candyman. And allegedly that was supposed to be an homage to Clive Barker, that the only homosexual couple in the entire movie doesn't get killed by Candyman.
And I think that's the way they approach this movie. And of course, this from what I understand, Jordan Peele was supposed to direct this, but eventually he just came on as a producer. But he has a writing credit with Nia DaCosta and another individual. And I feel like they spent so much time like breaking this idea and figuring out why this movie would be important to not only minorities, but horror fans, and just paying homage. And it was like this great, what I really like about sequels. Like, I think this was like perfectly done in that way. Like, Nia DaCosta also can direct the fuck out of this movie, man. She is
Yeah, her wonderful. Fucking, like, what they did, like, especially with, I might get this wrong. I want to say it's Kara, not Kara. Kara Walker's, like, that inspired.
Oh, the silhouette.
Silhouette, yeah. Work pieces. Because I've seen Kara Walker's stuff at the Broad, and it is, like, heavy to see in person. And it is, like, you see it in photos, but there's no way to really tell, like, how actually big these things are and how small some of them are, the pieces and stuff like that. And, like, how horrific it is to look at and just, like, this is what it was, the truth. And
yeah, I mean, it's thoughtfully written, wonderfully directed, very evoking cinematography. Not a weak performance, I think, in this entire cast. And... yeah. You know, and just really has something to say. Yeah, like, I mean, that's like
somebody I geek out every time he pops up. And I've actually been, I worked on a few things that he pops up on. I'm like, oh, it's Coleman Domingo. And everybody's like, who's that? I'm like, you fucking losers. Just kidding. I don't see that.
Get out of here. Go to the truck. Don't embarrass me. Yeah. No, I can't. I was continually, as this movie was unfolding, I was continually impressed because, again, like you were saying, John, like, I got mixed to negative word about this movie. And looking back on it now, it's like, where did this come from? I have no idea where. I'm baffled. Fantastic. I'm baffled by that. Yeah.
Again, I rewatched the second half 3 times. I got to be honest, the third time was just to rewatch the second half of the third time.
Which
I didn't want to mention that. So we do briefly talk a little bit before we start recording. And it took a lot for me not to mention that. I just told you, like, oh, we always talk about what else we've been watching just to, like, chit-chat. I was like, oh, yeah, the only other thing I, like, had time to really focus on was Candyman. I just didn't want to tell you. It's because I fucking rewatched an hour and some change of it. A couple more times.
No, exactly. Yeah. And I even wanted to, like, and I should have probably spent time. I was even going to try to, like, look back, because this is a few years ago, right? So look back at some of the podcasts that reviewed this movie and that I heard that are read reviews and, like, what are they mixed about this movie? Because I'm not quite understanding what didn't connect with them. I mean, movies. Sometimes movies connect with you. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're misses. Not everything connects, but I think that... I also
want to say, so this movie had the great honor of being the first film, and, like, also specific, I should say specifically a horror film, to reach number one at the box office. I think it beat out Free Guy, which, like, okay, Free Guy's fine. I thought it was a fun movie. It's not fucking great, but... to be directed by a black woman, so it had that honor. And I'm wondering if people were just like, did it deserve to be number one? And it's like, I think so. It was so good.
Yeah.
And you're gonna be hard missed. I'm like a huge fucking Yahya Abdul-Mateen II fan, so I can't say anything bad about anything he's ever done.
The only thing that what I'm about to say is not a criticism. This is not a criticism at all. That I almost feel like they could have went harder on the police brutality storyline that's in this movie. I almost feel like they could have maybe hit it harder.
I was curious than they about did. That. Yeah, I was as to, like, I feel it feels very intentional, right?
To be subtle, right? To be.
I mean, in fact. Well, I guess it's a spoiler. We don't see any of it at all for a majority of the film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You get little hints of it. But I think that's also setting up another plot point that there's, like, a mini twist at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to, like, tippy toe around the twist.
Cause it was way, but I misunderstood what people were saying, and I'm wondering about I mean, I guess it's already fucking spoiled. If you just, like, IMDb it, you see that Yahya Abdul
we can go to spoilers if you want. Do you want to go to spoilers?
The lead of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saved it. That was like, again, like that was like the only thing that I feel like they could have maybe intentionally hit harder. But like you said, I think it was a choice to kind of have it persistent through the movie and kind of crescendo at the end, right? The way it does. That theme of police brutality or law enforcement in general. Because it kind of, now that I'm thinking about it, it does kind of echo not only throughout the first movie, but even this movie, as the first scene is of we go back to, what is it? Cabrini Hills or something to that effect, right?
Yeah.
And we go back to, I believe, the 70s. And it opens with a kid going to go do laundry and Candyman appears, which ties to like kind of like a central story of reshaping the mythos of it without me spoiling it in a very, very smart and thoughtful, intentional way. And what comes out of that is that police brutality moment leads to another one, and it's kind of like echoed throughout the whole movie, and it's just nicely done.
Do you think that was, oh no, I'll give my opinion on that later. I'm sorry. There's something about that story that didn't occur to me until like the second or third time I watched the second half, where I was like, okay. Because I was having a little bit of trouble connecting some dots with that story and what happens the rest of the film.
Yeah, I feel like certain things are now that we're talking about it, I'm connecting, especially that theme of police brutality and how it kind of continues to echo through this, not only this movie, but the first movie as well. So really, really smart. But again, like I almost kind of wish it was more upfront about it, but I guess that's to each viewer, right? It's how they chose to approach it. So that's really like the only thing that I thought to say, not as a criticism, but as kind of like just a critique, like a, I don't know, just an opinion.
I did like something that probably went over a bunch of people's heads, like why, but there's the part where they go back to, I forgot the name of the area, which they did go back to the actual location where they shot the original Candyman. It's just like the background is different because, you know, it's been what, 30 years or something. When the police drive by, even though it's not near where Yaya's character is kind of like looking around to scope out the idea, because he's trying to be inspired to paint again, I think is the idea.
Right.
Where he like hides behind a wall real quick, even though the police aren't nearby, because that's a thing that, you know, that's a very obvious commentary on like, yeah.
He had just trespassed, yeah. So,
but I mean, like, you know, other people.
But no, like, I get you. I get what you mean. That is, you're right. Yeah. I just meant like he had just trespassed. So it could be interpreted that way on the surface. But if you kind of dig more, he's probably scared to be not only trespassing, but you know, being black and trespassing, and police coming by. So
I mean, I'd even
I get that.
Just like police coming by and he's black.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right, yeah.
Yeah, good shit. We haven't really talked about him being an artist, but yeah, it's like very talented artist, hasn't painted anything in a couple years. His partner, she's like the curator and introduces his art to these places, and
yes, yeah, and she's the people from the outside see them as he's kind of using her because she has like, she's in charge and has all these connections and stuff like that in the art world. And he's kind of like a struggling artist kind of out of college, maybe had some decent stuff, but it's kind of like you said, not really done anything significant yet.
All these people that are kind of like wanting to see more in all these pieces, are all white and kind of dance around the idea without saying it flat out, without saying like, well, it's because you're black and you make like black art, so that's what we want. You know, they like use other words like, oh, well, artists go where the struggling are, and that's where real art comes from. And that's where, you know, the whole gentrification process comes in or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. I thought it was really well written. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. They did use that, the way they tackle gentrification, why it exists, what happens to it, and why things need to be gentrified in the first place, they kind of touch upon, which is really, really thoughtful, insightful things to hear.
And shout out to whoever created the art for his art pieces or whatever, because they were really good. Like his like most famous piece that goes, you know, viral, I guess is the best way to put it, is he puts up three mirrors, and one of the middle mirrors, which is like a supposed to be like a bathroom cabinet mirror, opens up, right? Like a medicine cabinet. But it just, you know, tries to influence you into saying, oh, we already said Candyman five times. We're fucked. Okay. So I was trying to not say that. Candyman five times. And of course that's what starts the chain reaction. Because it's like, yeah, that's when shit starts to go. And I'll leave it at that before we get into spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. And again, there's a lot of some subtle, not so subtle things about social commentary that they do incredibly well. Yeah, let's just go into spoilers. You want to go to spoilers?
Yeah, let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
Which was your favorite death? They're all really good, but I'm torn between the teenage girls.
Yeah.
Which allegedly this has the highest count of teenage deaths in a movie. And,
ooh, win.
And, the art, what do you call it? Critic. Because it's like so, fun. There's this part where, Yaya's character, I forgot his real, I mean, if his name in the fucking
Anthony,
yep. Starts to see a shift in his reality a little bit more. Like he's trying to look in the mirror and he sees, the Candyman from, the '70s or whatever time it was. And he sees that it's like mimicking what he's doing, almost like it's a reflection of him. So he freaks out and leaves. And I guess you're supposed to assume that the art critic did do what he said and said Candyman in the mirror five times. And there's this like slow pullout where Anthony's like running into a hallway and you see that this apartment complex just has like a bunch of like windows for like the wall facing out. And you see all these people doing their thing and she's like from far away kind of running to the door. And then you see her kind of get picked up as the camera's still pulling away and you see her throat get slashed as like a little like square image in the back. I was like, that's fucking rad.
So yeah, I think the way this Candyman works is that he will only appear if you say his name five times. So I loved, so we should probably just get into the meat of it. Like Anthony ends up being the little baby that the OG Candyman wanted. I'm assuming as some sort of like, What do you call it? Like a, not surrogate, but like a, pass the hook, the baton, the,
Yes, because Anthony's real mother, which he wasn't aware his mother was not his real mother until he went to a hospital nearby and the doctor kind of spilled the beans and said like, oh, welcome back, which is a fucking weird thing for a doctor to say. That's probably the one part of the movie where I'm like, okay. Because she's like, welcome back. Because it says right here, you're born in this hospital. Like, nobody. No, the doctors don't do that. But
no.
Doctors come in, cold, leave cold. Yeah, and he's like, I wasn't born here. I was born wherever else. And she's like, nope, you were born here. So confronts his, like, you know, quote-unquote mother. And mother tells Anthony the whole story about how his biological mother was kind of like the previous Candyman.
Yeah.
And she eventually got like shot, I think, by police also.
Well, I think wasn't she? I think he's supposed to, he's the baby from the first movie. And the candy, so what they do is that the Candyman, they set up the mythos of the Candyman being passed.
Right.
To, you know, from the OG, from our OG Candyman.
Candyman to.
There's been several other people leaving.
Including
which is,
a young boy, which like really like, oh my God, it's terrible. But I kind of want to see that story too.
Yeah, right. I mean, I like that they build that out. So the hook is passed to Anthony, who becomes the new Candyman. They do some sort of like ritual type thing, but I interpret it as like.
I think there was a Candyman in the 1600s too, because Dustin Hoffman also plays Hook. I probably got that century wrong, by the way.
Got caught with a lot of Lost Boys. Yeah. and so he ends up becoming Candyman, which I thought was beautiful because like Tony Todd's getting older. I don't know if you've seen him lately. He's a much older man. He can't continue to
fun story. When I first moved here, I want to say like a year or so in, I went to my local pavilions over in Hollywood and I was trying not to be creepy, but was kind of just walking around the same aisles Tony Todd was in just to be near Tony Todd. Very tall man, had like what's the best way to say this? I don't want to call it gaudy, but like this like pretty nice kind of aged Mercedes, all white. Like I just still remember because I'm like, it's Tony Todd.
Yeah.
I said Candyman under my breath 5 times, but he did not talk to me, so I just proved that.
So it's interesting that he's a presence in this movie, but he's not really in this movie.
No. Cause
there's an incident in the beginning of this movie that sets up who the latest Candyman was, right? Somebody, right. This man who was unjustly killed, and he was just like a kind of like maybe mentally unstable gentleman who just gave out a lot of candy to kids and stuff. And he was murdered,
yeah,
or something, right? I forget the details of it, but
I think that was most of it. I think the idea was there was another Candyman already going around killing people, and then they just put the blame on that guy. Because the way Coleman Domingo's character, who was a kid, explains the story was like, yeah, he came out with the hook and he was already Candyman, which I think was a lie. To influence Anthony into thinking about Candyman also. And knowing that part of the story so you would know it again. Because I think the whole point of what Coleman Domingo was trying to do, especially with him going to the old neighborhood, was like, yeah, people just kind of forget. And, you know, it's important to remember. And that was like the whole point of Coleman Domingo's whole journey with Anthony was to try to reignite the legend of Candyman. Which I kind of read a little bit and kind of gathered the reason. Whenever Candyman pops up, he doesn't really talk. And he's not really like present there. He's kind of like seen in mirrors only, which is kind of like, you know, like the original as well. But is because his presence is too weak and not remembered. So he's not like at full power, quote unquote.
Interesting. Yeah. And he becomes, with him being this surrogate baby, he becomes like the next heir apparent who they end up doing some ritual. He becomes Candyman. And they do something in this movie that I think maybe this is, they kind of turn, they, Brianna, his partner or whatever, girlfriend, he uses them as a force for good. Which could be why maybe people didn't like it, which I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Maybe they didn't like that, but I did. I loved it. I was like on board for it. I thought that was a clever way of, you know, kind of twisting the idea of who this guy is, right? Like,
well, I mean, I also want to say, in the original, it wasn't like he was necessarily killing good people. They were all shitty people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you could even argue. Well, I feel like the one that didn't deserve it the most in this movie was like they have a little flashback of the, I'm assuming is the kid that becomes Candyman also at one point, but I mean, the timing might be wrong also, where his sister's in the bathroom. You never see the sister, but tells him, no, you can't play. And obviously they play the Candyman game, and then Candyman murders all those, whoever's in the bathroom with the sister, and just kind of like hushes them in the mirror. But she was being kind of mean to him. I don't know. But even like the teenage girls were being super fucking racist to like this young black girl that runs in that's trying to go to the restroom.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, and then the one Asian friend in the group was like basically like, fuck this, and leaves like right away, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and I think that that was a good way, and it kind of made sense that they kind of twisted his character, because he's not only going to be, he's still probably going to be like, if you say his name five times, he'll go and kill you, right? He still have that job, but because I guess he just had this relationship with Brianna, girlfriend, maybe he...
I want there to be like a second, like a co-movie where it shows like Candyman's perspective as like a ghost. And somebody says Candyman five times, and he's like, here we go again. Just like gets up out of his chair and puts his coat on. Like, God, it's like way too hot for this. It's like floating around upset.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this movie hit like all the notes, all the right notes for me. And then Nia DaCosta, she's doing the Marvels next, which... I actually was quite excited for it because I enjoyed the TV show. I liked Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for her to do something else. I think it was, she kind of brings her talents, her intelligence to this movie. And it just like feels like a director who had a lot of influence on the choices. And I liked all the choices she made basically in this movie. So I'm pretty excited about the Marvels as well.
1,000,000% agree. I think before we end this, we need to talk about this ending.
Okay.
I was like, it could have ended before it ended. And I would have been obviously upset, but still satisfied, because that's the reality of life. Because like when Coleman Domingo comes clean about what he's been doing and like forces Anthony to become completely Candyman by basically sawing his arm off after he's like drugged him, right? And shoves a hook in there and pulls out the candy with the razor blades in it, and Anthony's partner, what's her name again?
Brianna.
Brianna.
Brianna was her name.
Horrible with names. Right, runs away.
So he was, I guess, well, let me just take one step back. So this character was trying to bring like finish what the OG Candyman wanted, right? By giving Anthony, kind of passing the baton here.
I think it was more important to him that the legend was reignited so it wasn't forgotten.
Because he was the kid.
Yes.
That,
which I, yeah, because several of the conversations he has with Anthony throughout the movie talk about how important it is that people remember, or else they'll forget and they'll stop, I don't know, not like being afraid, but I'm guessing the idea is like you don't remember that these things will exist, then certain sects, I should have chosen a better word with fucking braces on. I think it sounds like I'm saying sex.
Yeah.
Like white cops and, you know, at the forefront won't be as afraid to do things.
Yeah. You know? And coincidentally, he's the one that made, by accident, he made the Candyman when he was a kid, and now he's making the next one. So he kind of feels guilty, kind of feels like he's like a part of this mythology in a way, kind of like tied to it, which I thought was kind of interesting. That was a different, that wasn't where I thought this was going. And actually, I didn't think that we were going to get another Candyman. And that storyline of sort of the passing and giving it to a new person would, what I would really like to see other horror franchises take, specifically Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
No. I would really love them to, you know, Robert Englund play Freddy one more time, but yet passes it on to somebody else. And, you know, we get a whole nother series out of that. Cause that's maybe one that's like one of the few franchises they haven't rebooted. And I think this approach of, they've tried over the years.
They did. Oh, Haley, right? He did a good job. It just like,
it wasn't him.
It wasn't well written. Yeah. It wasn't like, there was several things went against that film.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that if they just bring, I think I read that they are bringing Robert Englund back. So that's honestly what I would like to see. What I would like to see, him passing on that character on to somebody new. So, and this is what Candyman did. And this is the blueprint. They should follow this blueprint.
Because I know? Like Coleman Domingo's whole story about the mythos, where Anthony is trying to ask about it, like, so who is Candyman? He's like, it's not who, it's the whole damn hive. And he explains it's like, it is these people, but it's every, you know, person of color that has been fucking affected by this. This is what Candyman is.
Yep.
But yeah, you finally, like, Anthony gets shot by the police for no reason. And then I love this whole, Brianna is like in the back of the police car handcuffed for no reason also. And the whole, like, the white cop is trying to, like, which these guys did a great job, by the way. They have very little to say, and they were able to fucking perfectly execute like a horrible type of person. Where she convinces him to like let her look at herself in the mirror, and when she says Candyman four times, but he says it the fifth time. And then you see cops fucking freaking out, running out, and then that whole like you see just like kind of floating out as a new Candyman. I was like, oh shit! Because if it had ended with just Yaya dying and her in the back of the police car, I would have been like, wow, that's a pretty fucking intense ending already.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Like, holy crap, it was so good. And then like,
I think they,
his little voiceover inside the cop's head, and when it finally comes to like showing the cop again, mm-hmm. and he's just like weeping.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, fuck, yeah.
I think they telegraphed his sort of ascension to this Candyman part to be really cool. And I think it's really smart to pick a franchise that never really got good sequels, that hasn't been around for, 20, 30 years. So rebooting it with somebody new, somebody exciting, new, fresh, young actor, and
we did
kind of exploring it.
We did get a little Tony Todd at the end, and I got all like geeked out.
Yep, we did. Yeah, even in the painting too, he was kind of in there too. So,
but like it was Tony Todd. They just obviously they de-aged him, but I was like, fuck yeah, that was good.
Really, really good. Really good. Alrighty, do you have any last thoughts?
No, I'm probably gonna keep this one on my catalog, like in my rotation of horror movies to watch like during Halloween probably.
Yeah, definitely. I think we need to
this come true, X-ray aka hospital massacre.
Yeah, we really gotta bring on opposition voice, you know, kind of see what they saw we didn't see. You know, and how wrong they are, and put them in their place, John. We'll just try.
How wrong they are, and, you know, maybe you're the type of person Candyman needs to visit, and you say horrible shit like that to them. See
what happens. You're probably the type to call the cops.
You are these cops, aren't you?
You are these guys. You Karen. All right, John. How many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy
Candyman. 9 sexy spooky bones.
Yes, I will do the same. I'm going to give it 9 sexy spooky bones. Should have seen it earlier, but glad I saw it. I guess it's the way I'd put it.
I want to give that name one more go. Nia DaCosta. I can't fucking. Hey, so everybody else still wearing braces. Only got to do it for another 5 weeks. It is making everything sound very funky all the time.
You could, I mean, we can even sound it out like this. Nia DaCosta. You could say it like that too.
Nia DaCosta. You got some good ones, but you got a lot of bad sex. I still can't say sex.
Suck.
With these things on.
Well, none for you then, John.
This is my endorsement to Invisalign, by the way. Works wonders. Can't tell they're there until you start talking and try to sound out.
Put that in the ads, guys. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay Candyman, 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 spooky.